Okay, we're gonna start this with showing you this card. So Nali is right here. She's gonna start giving you two things. There are t-shirts, if you don't have one already, and also a card. Can I just get a show of hands of who has already started developing an app for SharePoint? Okay, good job. These cards that Sonali is going to be passing around, please fill them up, and you can bring them by the end of the session to me, or you can take them to the SharePoint store kiosk in the expo hall. And the good thing about them is that we're doing a raffle, and those of you who are lucky are going to get one-of-one sessions with folks like me and the other persons in my team to help you get started with your app and thinking about the architecture and all that stuff. And it's just a one-on-one session, so it's really, really good. Okay, so if you don't get one of those cards, see Sonali, some of them are gonna be here. Make sure you fill one out. And then maybe you'll get the chance to have the one-on-one session with one of our team members during the next 2 days. Okay, so with that, it's time to get started. I hope everyone is having fun so far and that you can see me. I'm standing up on a cradle here, so I can still at least see you. It's the first time that I attend a SharePoint conference, and I am thrilled to see all the energy and vibe that this conference has and seeing so many passionate folks gathering around a single product. So go SharePoint. This is just awesome and mind-blowing. My name is Gina Arenas. I am a program manager for the SharePoint developer team, and for the past 2 years, I have been working on this game changer that we call the SharePoint Cloud App model. And I'm delighted to have the opportunity today to talk to you about a good chunk of what the app model has to offer, in particular when the app or parts of it are hosted in SharePoint. So this is the overview for developing SharePoint hosted apps. And let me get my clicker. The agenda. First thing we're going to do is do an overview of the app model. By this point, everybody should have a basic understanding of what the app model is, so we're not going to go into it in great detail. Instead, we're just going to do a quick overview to set the context and make sure we are on the same page. And then we're going to focus the bulk of my talk on the three different layers: data, logic, and UX, and the components on each that you can use as building blocks for your app. I'm going to spend some time in slides with a few core concepts to address points that I've seen cause most confusion when folks are first introduced into the app model. And then I'm also gonna spend some time in demos that showcase in real time the functionality that I'm gonna present in the slides. With that, let's get rolling with the overview. Okay. I think that you've seen this description in our documentation, and everyone and their grandma knows what an app is. And because we're familiar with other app models and other platforms that we use them in our daily life, we all know how it allows users to get stuff done and solve business problems and blah, blah, blah. And that is what is important to note here is that apps for SharePoint add a conceptual shift to the new era of solution deployment and development. We're really changing the game here. We're moving away from code running on the SharePoint server and provide a very, very powerful and flexible framework that you as a developer can use and reach millions of users. Now, all you need to do is learn the basics, start building these babies, and get happy users that will pay big bucks for the functionality that you have to offer. Okay, this is a slide that Keenan presented yesterday and that you will see a lot during the developer-oriented presentations during the conference. I have it here because it's super important that these points resonate with you. And if you take nothing away from all these sessions, you should take away those points. First off, apps are new, and they're awesome. This is the model that is built for the cloud. It has multiple hosting options, allowing you to use the technologies of your choice to build apps that to build your apps and the business logic that powers them. It has a clean isolation and lifecycle policies, so everything from discovery, acquisition, installation, upgrade, and uninstallation guarantee that the user has clear expectations on their behavior, but most important, that the farm, the SharePoint farm, is not compromised at all by the apps that are installed on it. I also want to note that it is ready for the cloud, yes, but it works both on-prem and in the cloud. And this is a very powerful concept that you can take the same solution and deploy it in both environments. Next is based on web standards and familiar toolsets. We're making sure that it's very easy to build your user experiences just using HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, you know, just common base technologies that you might be familiar with. We're also made an incredibly big investment in this release in unifying our API surface. So you can still use, I mean, you can still, I mean, our, if you are familiar with our client-side object model and our endpoints, we're unifying them into a single API that can be called using the libraries that you're familiar with, like .NET, JavaScript, and Silverlight. We're also are introducing a Silverlight library for Windows Phone development. And we're exposing all that same set of APIs via REST. Now, an important point to highlight here is that those APIs no longer include just SharePoint Foundation. They also include search, taxonomy, feeds, user profiles, business connectivity services, and many, many more. We also have embraced OAuth for server-to-server authentication, and that added to a unified API makes SharePoint very easy to consume as a service. So in all, this is a very, really, stressing too much, a really powerful and flexible model. Then at the end of this presentation, I have the list of other sessions that I recommend that you check out either today or after the conference. Okay, let's move into app hosting. When it comes to hosting, there are three different architectural approaches in two main buckets. The first bucket is the cloud-hosted apps. This is where your apps are hosted remotely and the functionality, the business logic, is running either on an external server or in the client. Out of this cloud-hosted app bucket, there are two flavors. The provider-hosted is the one in which you own the infrastructure in which the business logic is running. The second one is when we as Microsoft take care of that infrastructure for you. In here, the app package contains also a web package and a SQL and a database package that when the app is installed into a SharePoint site, we automatically take care of the provisioning of an Azure website and a SQL Azure database that will be hosting the power for your app. The second bucket is the SharePoint hosted bucket. This one provides the ability to use native SharePoint components such as lists, content types, web parts, libraries, and all the things that you're already familiar with SharePoint, they can just be part of your SharePoint hosted app. A key takeaway point that I want to highlight here is that at no time you have to make a choice whether you do a cloud hosted or a SharePoint hosted. Actually, these are functionality that you can mix and match within your app. And in fact, I truly believe that the best apps that are going to be available in the marketplace are going to be a combination of both SharePoint hosted and cloud hosted components. And where you go to and which one is your center of gravity totally depends on your scenario. We talk about them separately because we want to make sure that we communicate what are the different capabilities that each model has. But in no point, it is a kind of a choice. You can pick parts of it and have parts of your app being in the cloud and be parts in Europe being hosted in SharePoint. So we're here. This is where the bulk of the session is going to be concentrated on. I'm going to be showing you all the things that you can do with SharePoint hosted apps. Now, explicitly talking about SharePoint hosted apps, there are key several characteristics that make them very attractive. First, since it is just SharePoint components, they run the same whether you have an on-prem in deployment or an online deployment as part of Office 365. Second, since this is client-side code, it is running in the context of an active browser session. The authentication is already taken care for you. For the user, as part of the normal authentication flow of SharePoint, and for the app, because as I'm going to show later, each app has a unique associated domain to it, such that every time that the app makes requests back to the SharePoint server, SharePoint knows how to identify which is the app that is calling and is able to then assign the appropriate permissions that the app has to it, to each of the requests. Next is inheritance of multi-tenancy and isolation. When you develop a SharePoint hosted app that is installed and used by millions of users, you don't have to worry about your customers' data and separating your customers' data when the data is stored as part of SharePoint, right? Whereas in a provider hoster model, if you're storing the data for the customer yourself, you have to worry about how do you isolate that data. Since the app for hosted in SharePoint just takes that from the same multi-tenancy that we already have in the service, you don't have to worry about that and implement and code for that. The next thing is that SharePoint hosted apps come at no additional cost for both the developer and the user. Since it is hosted in SharePoint, you don't have to pay for additional infrastructure, or you don't have to pay for the additional infrastructure that is going to be hosting your app. And the auto-hosted option does share some of these characteristics. And for that, I recommend that you take a look at that, the session that is covered in them. Okay, now let's talk about SharePoint component isolation. This is one point where I've seen some terminology confusion. When an app that includes SharePoint hosted components is installed on a web, the app components and content, such as the lists, the libraries, the workflows, and the pages, are deployed in a special web in an isolated domain. This fact is largely hidden from the end user, but the web to which the app is installed is called the host web, which is the one that I have here in blue, with the URL contoso.sharepoint.com/site. The special web into which the app is installed is called the app web, which is the one I have here in purple, with the URL https://contoso-appuid, which is a unique identifier that is assigned to each installation of the app, .sharepoint.com/site/app. You can think of an app web as a dynamically created safe place for your app. Besides allowing you to store all the content that comes with the app, like pages, lists, libraries, and all that, the app web is an isolated endpoint that your app can securely call by using JavaScript. There are two primary reasons for deploying apps in app webs rather than in host webs, and both are related to security. The first one is enforcement of app permissions. Like I was mentioning before, this time around, apps have their own identity, so no longer as we used to have before with sandbox solutions that they were running on the same process as the user. No longer we have that. Apps have their own identity and run with a set of permissions that are not necessarily the same set of permissions that the user who's executing the app has. So by giving a unique domain to each app installation, SharePoint, the requests that are made by SharePoint, by the app to the SharePoint server, SharePoint is able to identify which app is and enforce the permissions that are associated with it. The second reason is for cross-domain scripting security. Modern browsers support a same origin policy with regards to the JavaScript methods that can be called from within an active page. By deploying this app in its own domain, we make sure that the JavaScript from other domains cannot be loaded within the app, and leverage the browser security to protect both the user data and the app itself. Now, let's not be confused here with the term web app. I know we're in SharePoint are very, very, we tend to confuse a lot with terminology. So an app web is not a web app, and a web app is not an app web. If you are familiar with SharePoint site structure, an app web is basically derived from an SP web object, and it has a different domain associated to it. It belongs to the same site collection into which the app is installed. Another confusion point that I've seen a lot in our documentation is that when you're reading about how we integrated with OAuth, they also talk about an app web. This app web is actually refers to the external service and not to the SharePoint app web. So take that into account when you read the documentation for OAuth. So this is important. When I'm talking here about an app web, I mean that SP web object that has been provisioned for the app and contains all the things that the app has. Okay. Now let's drill into what you can do inside of that isolated app web. Here are the available components that you can build within that space. This is a high-level list, and by no means is a complete list. The complete list is in dev.office.com, which I totally encourage you that you go there and check it out. But this is what I think are probably the most common things that you are likely to be using when building your own apps. SharePoint-hosted apps can make use of several declarative elements, along with services, web services, and script. We'll go into each layer in detail during the talk, but I wanted a slide to have it here so you can have a framework to think about this. And as I mentioned before, this is not an entire list. With that, I'm going to be moving to the first part of my demo. For this demo, I will show you the end result of the app that we're going to be building during this session, just to give you a sense of how it comes together and a quick rundown of where all the pieces are. So this is an app that I built to keep an eye on the latest news about our competitors. As a program manager, I have to be informed and keep up with their latest moves. So I built this app that uses a feature called Web Proxy. It's a feature dear to my heart because I built it for you. And it makes requests to Bing looking for the news, for the latest news on a set of competitors that I have stored in a SharePoint list. It allows me to manage the list of those competitors. Right now here, this is the list of news that I'm retrieving from Bing. And I have these entry points using the promoted links list. To manage the list that I have, I can come here and add a new competitor, which, as you will see, is using the same new form.aspx UI from the lists. I'm just reusing it here with a couple of lines of declarative code. I'm reusing this UI. I didn't have to write it myself, and I can just leverage that as part of my app. Same thing for manage competitors. It's the same list experience that our users are already familiar with, and I can just come here and reuse it as part of my app functionality. And then I can also be social. Note, I'm using the callout here. That's another piece of just SharePoint UI. I can also be social and say, for example, I find this article super interesting. I can go ahead and post it to the feed. I can use the people picker control. And before I do that, actually, let me show you. This is my news feed before I do the post. Refresh that. And there you go. That's just by using JavaScript and the JSON APIs and reusing a lot of the SharePoint UI, I can integrate into core SharePoint experiences. Know that I'm just using SharePoint constructs, and the experience for the user is just like they don't have to learn something new. Okay, this is where we're going to build up during the session. Now let me move back to the presentation. Okay, let's get started with data. Every SharePoint app, or everything you do in SharePoint, is going to be driven by data one way or another. Because the SharePoint platform is geared to the managing of the flow of information, it's hard to think of an app development activity that will not involve like either aggregating data, displaying data, or some other sort of data manipulation. SharePoint apps provide developers with new ways to work with both internal and external data. In terms of storing data, there are two scenarios: internal app settings or user data. And the model for storing and retrieving the data is the same for both. At the app scope level, you can create columns or fields as you have been doing before with just list manipulation. You can do lists and content types. Lists are in some way conceptually similar to a SQL database, for those of you who are not familiar with the SharePoint list structure, that they are comprised of columns or fields and rows or list items. And everything in SharePoint is a list. And you can create relationship between lists or lookup fields. And they additionally provide the interface, like we were seeing before in the demo, of forms to interact with the list data. You can use old stuff like Camel. I just hope you don't. Or use REST or data to query SharePoint list data. Like I said before, you can still use foreign lookup keys and all the things that you're so familiar with developing against list, and the same way that you have been doing from before. Now, when we think about accessing external data, the fact that the app is isolated in its own domain brings up an interesting thing. Because of cross-domain restrictions, you cannot make an XML HTTP request directly to an external system. But there are several techniques that you can use to safely make these requests. The first one is just using web-based standard things that are available out there, like JSONP, CORS, or XDR. These ones are very flexible, but they do have some limitations. Like, for example, JSONP, both the entity making the request and the server have to agree on the protocol. The server has to support it. CORS and XDR are limited to browser implementations. So, and as an alternative, you can use the SharePoint web proxy, which allows you to do external requests by using SharePoint as a proxy for those requests. So you, from the client, execute a request to SharePoint, just very similar as making an XHR call. And then SharePoint gets that request and sends it to the external server, collects that information, and sends it back to you in the page. Finally, you can also use BCS, or Business Connectivity Services, and create a business data connectivity model for your app. This is mostly going to be if you have a very structured data that you want to access and bring it into SharePoint as if it was part of a normal SharePoint list. So this time around, if you're familiar with Business Connectivity Services, what we've done is that we have scoped them at the app level, and each app is going to be able to consume its own connections. And the Business Connectivity Service runtime is going to then create the external content types and that are going to be limited just to the app. And then an OData connection is going to be used to connect the app to that external service. Okay, so I'm going to jump back to the demo. For this demo piece, we're just going to start from Visual Studio, start building up the app. Since I have limited time here, I'm not going to do all the code, but I'm going to be inserting code snippets, and I'll explain it as I go along so you can follow. I have here a project that I've previously created. It has a bunch of images that I'm going to be using. I'm just going to first let you know what is different from what just creating a new project from Visual Studio is. and is that I've added a set of images, and I've also added a couple pages. I'm going to start with this page. For the first part of, the demo, we are going to do the retrieving of the data from the external service, which is Bing, and we're going to be using the web proxy feature, which is the one that I just explained. This is the page that is going to be hosting those articles that we're going to be retrieving from Bing. What I have here that is different from what you do, just start a new project from Visual Studio, is that I've added some script references. And I've also made use of content placeholders in the app to add the title by the breadcrumb and the title that is also as part of the page. And I've added some markup here, a div, that is going to hold on the articles that we're going to be retrieving from Bing. Okay. The next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to add a list that is going to be holding up the competitors for the app. I do that with Visual Studio adding new item experience. I'm going to give it a name. And for this list in particular, I'm just going to use the default blank list template. Okay, now everyone cross your fingers and hope that the network does let us do the demo. There you go. Okay, so this is a list. You can imagine you can have some other fields here. I'm just going to add one for notes. The one that is going to be holding up the important information is just a title one. I'm also going to come here to the elements files of the list. And I'm going to be adding some declarative elements that will introduce some data into my list. The reason I'm doing this is because I want the first user experience of my app to be right there. I don't want them to be having to set up the app. It's not an ideal user experience. You want them just to, when they launch the app, it's ready to go, and even if it is with just fake data. Okay, I'm going to save that. And I'm going to move into JavaScript. So here, the difference that I have here from just a new Visual Studio project is that I've added a new library, which I'm going to be explaining later on. This is app.js. App.js is the standard file that will hold your JavaScript from your app when you create a new project from Visual Studio. You can imagine that once you go into complex models and complex apps, you will have different files that will be backing up the logic for your app. But Visual Studio just comes with this one, and it also includes a Hello World type of thing that already is using CSOM to get to the web and get to the users that belong to that web. I'm going to remove that. I'm going to add some code. I'm going to explain it along. So what I have here is every time that you execute script on SharePoint, you want to call script on demand for sp.js, which is actually going to load the SharePoint JavaScript once the document object model from the page is ready. After that, I am calling two functions. The first function is get keywords. Get keywords, what it does is just the basic going through the list. I get the web object, then get the list by title, enumerate through the items that are part of that list. And what I'm doing here is I'm taking all those titles and making a query string that I'm going to send up to Bing. So this is the list enumerator. and this is the keyword that is going to all then be sent up to Bing. Once I get all that data from the list, I'm going to make a request using web proxy. I told you it was very similar to just using a normal XML HTTP request. And with that, we'll just you're going to set the URL, which is the URL of the endpoint that you want to access, then create a new SP web request info object, and add the URL and the method as parameters of that object. Then we just invoke the web proxy. You can do that using, from the SharePoint hosted app, you can do that using either JavaScript or REST. It will be very similar for REST. Passing in the context of the web and passing in the request object. When we execute it and get the data, what I'm doing here is just parsing that XML. It comes in as an XML blob. I'm using jQuery to parse the XML and retrieve the title and the link of the articles that are being retrieved from Bing. This one is good. I'm just using to catch failures. I mean, I expect that when you do your own apps, you have very, very, very robust error handling. This is not the right way to do it. This is just because it's a demo. And this one is an API that we have introduced to log custom app errors into the ULS logs. So this is something that will allow you to leverage the ULX logs for debugging. And then if you already have that app in production, that your customer will be able to send you that information to know what's going on. Okay, I'm going to save that. And I'm going to run it. But before that, I'm going to go here to the app manifest. And one thing that we do, in order to be able to use web proxy and use SharePoint as a proxy server for your external requests, you have to declare the endpoints that your app is going to be accessing. So I just have to come here to the app manifest and say, I'm going to be accessing bing.com. So let's run it. Right now, Visual Studio is packaging the app, and I'm using a tenancy hosted in Office 365, so I'm doing remote development against Office 365. Visual Studio is packaging and deploying the app towards that developer site in my tenancy. While that gets deployed, I can talk about the developer tenancy. I hope that you have already looked into dev.office.com. There's two ways that you can get a developer site, either signing up for a developer tenancy yourself, or it comes also as a site template in the enterprise queues. So if you have an enterprise queue already, you can just create a new site with that template, and you will be able to do remote development against this site. Okay, so here's the app. Basically, what it's doing right now is I have the list of news that I've retrieved from Bing, and I have the titles and each of the links for each of them. We're going to come back here and keep building on this. Now let's go back to the slides. We'll dive into logic. The logic for SharePoint hosted apps is quite simple. There's no server-side code. And you can use any client-side technology that you want. I do want to talk a little bit about the investments that we've done in this release in terms of JavaScript Object Model and REST. We've made a significant investment in unifying our API surface. So the idea of using just client-side technologies to make your apps is not only going to be possible this release, but it also is very powerful and appealing. Before, you had to do full trust code to access services like search or the user profiles. Right now, because everything is exposed through CSOM, just anything, and you can get at all that SharePoint goodness from anything that just can make an XML, that can make an old HTTP request, right? So there is a lot of powerful power and flexibility that allows you to build up great scenarios just by using client-side technologies. When you use REST, you notice that you no longer need to call _vin_vti/client.svc. You can just now call _API. And then from there, you can either pick up if you want the response to be retrieved as an atom feed with JSON or XML. And it makes very easy for you to access to the different elements on SharePoint. I have here a couple examples, like /web/title, /web/lists will get you to the list of that particular web, and so forth. And not just with the web objects, but also with social pieces, like /social feed, /my/news will get you to the context of your news feed. Also user profiles and getting to the people information. And even search, and I can do complex things like search queries just by using a URL. Which one you choose between JavaScript or REST totally depends on your scenario and on where are you more familiar with. But both of them have the same functionality behind them. Okay. This is a slide here that I have here to spur from some confusion that I've seen from people start building, when people first start building their apps. You can use JavaScript, the JavaScript object model or REST to interact with data that is inside of the app scope. But what I've seen is that most people get confused when they want to interact with data that is outside of the app scope, of the app web. If you want to access artifacts that are outside of the app web, you have to do two things. The first thing is request permissions to the scope that you want to access. And the second thing is make your CSAM request using the right client context. If you try using the client context of the web that you have and accessing lists that are in another web, you're going to get a lot of unauthorized messages from the server. So the right way to do it is just use app context site, which is a new API that we've introduced. You pass in the current context of the app where you are, and then put in the target URL, and that will retrieve the right context that you can use to execute your calls. This basically just puts a couple of more lines of code in your logic, but makes it very easy to interact with things that are outside of the app web. And then business logic. You can use, as I was saying before, you can use client-side technologies like JavaScript. And JavaScript has become an important factor on the creation of for the SharePoint developer. Perhaps you're not familiar with JavaScript from previous versions, but now using JavaScript is going to become one important development activity for your toolset. JavaScript itself is the language. And you can use it to create a whole set of libraries that you will be able to reuse as part of your app. And not only you can use your own libraries, but you can also bring libraries that are developed by other, just available out there in the web, and reference them as part of your app, and consume those pre-made libraries on the functionality that your app offers. By far, the most popular library is jQuery, which allows you to select elements from the document object model of the browser and perform operations with them. It turns out that this is basically what you're going to be doing the most when you're doing web development. So it's actually a very powerful JavaScript library that you can have as part of your building activities. One that I'd recommend is Knockout for if you're doing data binding. So, but there are all sorts of libraries that are out there that you can just reuse as part of your app, like Knockout, Dojo, ASP.NET Ajax, prototype, you name it, you can just bring them, use a CDN, or make a copy of the library of the file directly as part of your app, and you can just use them. I also want to note that you can use other client-side technologies like Silverlight or Flash. And if you want to do additional logic, you can also use workflows. You can use workflows for long-running operations or event-driven operations. Before, workflow was used to run as part of the SharePoint process, and now it's executing off-server using the workflow manager. It uses declarative XML statements to make HTTP requests to various services. And like, if you were familiar with workflow before, what you were doing was basically loading and executing a .NET assembly every time that your workflow executed. Where not anymore. Not right now, it's just an HTTP request that uses REST and OData. And if you have like an activity, for example, say an email, it will just make an HTTP request saying, hey, SharePoint, send this email. This is the body. This is a text. Let me know when you're done. And since this new model for workflow is running independently from SharePoint, you can use it to power the logic of your SharePoint-hosted apps. With that, let's move to keep on building on the app. And what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to go back to Visual Studio, and I'm going to build up the part of social integration and posting to the feed and seeing how we use JavaScript object model to access to this type of constructs and also using REST. For this part of the demo, I'm going to come here to the app manifest, and for a minute, I'm going to change the start page of my app. I'm going to set it as post.aspx. Let me quickly go ahead and show you what this page does. As I did before in the previous page, I have a set of JavaScript libraries that I'm referencing. And I also have a set of script links that I have here that I'm going to load only when the libraries are needed. And that is the difference between just having a script tag and a SharePoint script link tag. I also have added a page title and then a set of divs that are going to hold the elements that I'm going to put into this page. I'm going to be using the people picker, and I'm going to display some of the information that we get once the people picker results. And for that, I'm using these div placeholders. And there's also a placeholder for the message that we're going to use to post to the feed. Now I'm going to go back to the app manifest, and I'm going to go to the permissions. Since we're going to be accessing things that are not part of the app web scope, we have to request permissions for those. And the way we do it is setting the scope here. We're going to be accessing user profiles. I'm going to request read permissions for that. And in order to post to the feed right now, you'll need write permissions to the tenant. I'm now going to move to the JavaScript library that we have. And I'm going to add some script here that I'm going to explain. The first thing that I have here is using the people picker control. It is very easy to embed the people picker control in your pages. What you have to do is create a JSON dictionary that uses a schema to store the people picker properties. Oh my gosh, this is funny to hear me say this. It's like the purple, yeah, that one. In the schema, you can define a set of properties. Like, for instance, if you are only allowing user or groups to be resolved as part of your people picker, you can allow multiple values and set the width. The interesting one is this one, which is unresolved client script. Once the people picker resolves and grabs that either user or group, you can pass in script that will run and execute as part of it when it gets resolved. After that, what I'm going to do is create a picker object and grab the information that is part of that object. Since I'm saying that I'm only allowing one value, the first value of that array is going to be the user information that I'm grabbing. So what I'm going to do next is iterate over the properties and print them in the page. The next thing you have to do is execute on demand client templates and client forms, which is here. Okay, let's see that on action. Hopefully this time around is faster. No. There you go. Okay, the first thing that we see here is since we are now requesting permissions for things that are out of the scope of the app web, this is where the users get that app permissions UI. It's going to basically say what are the things that the app is requesting permissions to, and then provide the user the ability to trust that app. There is no granularity on I'll just trust one piece and not trust the other. It's just a by one or nothing. So I'm using here the people picker, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to print in the page the information that SharePoint stores about each particular user. Let me do this. So you see these are all the properties that SharePoint has for each user, but the interesting one and the one that you're going to use in order to post to the feed is the user key. This is a unique key that SharePoint assigns to each user that it knows of. Okay, let's go back to Visual Studio. And let me explain the posting to the feed method function. So here, what we're going to do is use the social APIs and create a feed manager, just new social feed manager. And then to that, you can add a set of properties and or items, like set which is the person that you're mentioning, send a link, send attachments, and so forth. I'm going to explain a little bit what we do with the user. The link is very similar, and then I'm going to explain the attachment. So for the user, what we do is just create a new social data item. We specify the type user, and then add the properties. Display text is the name of the user. And the person in the key is the one that I just showed you, which is the key that SharePoint uses for each particular user. Link is very similar, so I'm not going to go into it. For the attachment, I'm putting in a little icon for the app. This one is a little bit different. What you do is create a SP Social attachment, set the kind of that attachment, which is an image. You can use documents and stuff like that, too. And then set the URI or where that attachment is located. Once you have all those, you can just create a post-creation data item, attach those social data items from before, and just execute the request. Let's see that in action. Oh, wait. Before seeing that in action, let me actually show something else. What I'm going to show next is how using REST I can get into access the social feed as well. So notice how easy it is. I just create a URL with the scopes that I want to access. Here I'm accessing /social feed/my/timeline feed. And then I just create an Ajax request to SharePoint with that information. When it comes back as an atom feed. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a JavaScript library. This one is Knockout. And apply bindings to it and put it into the page. So what you will see is I'm going to do the post into the feed, and then we're going to see that timeline being updated. Let me quickly go here and show that. So notice the one that we're retrieving here is the one that we did at the beginning of the session. And then I have here, hi, this is a new post that I just did right now. And notice how using JavaScript libraries that are available out there, I can do, you know, very decent data bindings on the page. I have no CSS or styling whatsoever here, and it, you know, I already get a very decent UI. Okay. So that completes this demo. I'm gonna go jump to the, back to the slides. I've left my favorite piece for the end, because this is where I'll show you how it all comes together. Apps empower users to add new functionality to their sites. And yes, apps have to have a great functionality, but it's not just about that. It's obviously important, but also ensuring that the app looks great and that it makes the user feel like it belongs to the site where it's installed, it's very important. And it's not just about the looks, it's also about usability. So in terms of user experience, the reason why having your user experience hosted in SharePoint is way cooler and interesting is because it's really easy for you to build an experience that it aligns to what users are already familiar with. Because you're using SharePoint UI constructs, you get a lot of styling for free, and you don't have to worry about extra work to make your UI look like SharePoint. It just does. Again, you get a lot of styling for free. And not just styling, you get a lot of things for free, and I'm going to stress that. You get a lot for free that you don't have to rebuild, specifically around using things like UI for lists and using the callout, using dialogues, using custom actions. And all this, the user will automatically get the experience with interacting with all these constructs that the user is already familiar because of that's a normal SharePoint user experience. And also, again, because it's being built as part of SharePoint, it is very well integrated with all the other SharePoint core experiences. One thing that I wanted to show is the app web template. This is something, the app web template is the default web template that SharePoint hosted apps will use. You're welcome to create a custom default, custom template if you have more specific scenarios, but we really encourage you that you just use this one, which is actually pretty blank, and it's a great starting point for the vast majority of apps. It comes by default with Visual Studio, but Visual Studio is not the only way that you can build apps for SharePoint. So you can just go from there. It includes a master page called app.master, which is specifically designed for apps, where it trims away some of the confusing UI that might not work well within an app. But it really gives you a blank canvas to build up your UI from there, and a content area that you can use. And we're taking out care of the Chrome and the styling. Another thing that the app web template includes is the app master page, which is basically, the app lockdown feature, which basically hides dangerous or confusing UI entry points that from your app web. For example, if you're reusing the list UI, you probably don't want end users to be mocking up with the list settings. And we hide all those entry points from the UI as part of that web template. And then the app web template contains no homepage or no standard lists. Like I said, it's just basically a blank canvas where you can build your UI and reuse the SharePoint goodness from there. This is a slide here that I have for clarity more than anything. Apps can use custom actions. And custom actions can be at two scopes. Remember that we talked about the host web and the app web. When apps deploy custom actions at the host web level, they can only target the ECB and the ribbon, and they're basically just launching points, just URLs. But when they are part of the app web, they can target any location, ribbon, script, ECB, script link, ECB, and they can contain script. So the difference between the custom actions is from the host web and the app web is very dramatical. And for the host web, it's just a URL launching point. And for the app web, you have the full power of what custom actions have to offer. OK, let's go back to the demo. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to hide the user info. Oh, this is not what I'm going to hide. Hide the user info that we displayed on the page, and then hide the RSS feed that we retrieved as well. I'm going to go back to the app manifest, and I'm going to change the launching page again to default. And then I'm going to go back here to my JavaScript. And I'm going to add the JavaScript to be able to use both the callout and the dialogues. So to use the callouts in your page, do you remember where the first time I showed you the app, we had each article, and then I could use the callout to do some other actions. You can just do the script on demand for the callout.js, and then create the elements that I'm going to show later. And then for the dialogue, the same thing. You pass a set of options. Right now, I'm passing the page URL and the width and height that I want the dialogue to have, and execute sp.ui dialogue.js. So remember that when we retrieve the data from web proxy, I just did some basic parsing of that data and put the title and the link on the page. I'm going to take that off, and I'm going to add a new set of parsing. What I'm doing here is, since this thing is returning as an RSS feed, it contains a set of properties already, like the link title, publication date, and description. I'm going to add them to the page. And note here that I'm going to be using semantic HTML and also SharePoint CSS classes to make it look better. And for an entire list of the CSS classes that you can use as part of your UI, there is App UX guidelines document in dev.office.com that you can reference. So here I'm using SharePoint CSS classes and semantic HTML. The next thing that we're going to do is add the callout. For the callout, we're going to create an object on the DOM, a div, where it's going to hang out. And then we're going to create a callout manager with passing a set of properties, which like the orientation or the how do you want it to open, like on hover or on click. And then pass the contents of it. For the callout actions, remember that we had two, open and post to feed. For open, we're just basically going to take that link and pass it as the action that is going to be executing every time that the action is clicked. And the next one is post to feed. Here we're going to pass in that post page and use the dialogue function to open it as part of the dialogue. I'm going to make sure that we load the scripts that are needed, and let's try that. Okay. So notice that here, since now I'm using semantic HTML and some of those SharePoint CSS classes, it formats all this text in such a beautiful way, and I didn't have to do much more about it, just referencing SharePoint CSS. And here I'm using here's the callout with the actions that I set up on it. Now let's go back and see how I added the list with that UI. I actually saw an article, I was looking the other day, and I saw an article of a developer that rewrote all the tile functionality in JavaScript to be able to add it as part of his app. And I was so happy to be able to send him this code snippet on how he can do that, which is using declarative code. I got an I love you out of that. So for that, first I'm going to add the list. What I'm going to do here is that list is going to be holding up some of the user actions that are going to be available as part of the app. And the template that I'm going to use for this list is the promoted links list. I'm going to right away come here to the elements file. And again, get into the declaration of the list instance and add some data. Notice these are just declarative elements. I have the title of the tile, the description, the location where I want it to launch, the background image, and the launch behavior. Notice the location that I'm using here is just, if you look at the URL, it's just that new form.aspx page of the list, and I'm just saying, hey, open it up as a dialogue. The same thing I'm doing for the all items page, and for some others that I have here that you can imagine that there's other functionality behind them. Now, in order to put it into the app, what I need to do is come into the page and just add a list view web part. Very simple declaration of the list view web part. I'm not using any fancy properties here. And with that, let's try it. I created the list, declaratively set the elements on the list, and added the list view web part to the page. There's no JavaScript in there. And the result is pretty beautiful. Let's see before that. Okay, here it is. I'm using that tile list view just by using declarative elements. And in just that much time, we've managed to rebuild the app that I showed at the beginning of the talk. And not only that, but also, let me show you what happens when the sites are themed. So this is the app that we built. But when the theme for the site changes, my app changes with it. I don't have to do anything or write any other code. Just because I'm using semantic HTML, reusing the CSS classes, and using that web template, and using SharePoint-hosted components, I just get that theme for free. I don't have to do anything to make my app look like it belongs to the site. and make the user experience be just part of it. Okay, let's go back to the deck. With that, I arrived to the summary slide of my talk. We did a quick overview of the app model, dived into the three different layers, data, logic, and UX. And I showed some of the components that you can use as building blocks for your apps. For data, we looked into using lists as data structures and being able to access external data just using various techniques. For logic, we saw how by using client-side object model and REST and the REST API, along with the other supporting technologies, you can build a fully functional app that can solve a whole bunch of business problems without just writing a single line of server-side code. And for UX, we saw how simple it is to reuse SharePoint UI constructs and make your app look awesome and just get all the stuff for free. With that, thank you. And remember to fill out evaluations at my SPC. Beautiful faces also count, so give me good numbers. There are here some other talks of interest that I suggest you check up during the later today or after the conference. Again, if you have not filled one of this yet, please do. You might be lucky and get a one-on-one session with me. So, yes, Gene knows about that. He'll tell you that he gets a lot from those sessions. Okay, and if there's any questions, I'm just going to leave it on this slide and take questions. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a bit shorter. My name is Shai Patel. I'm from Quizcom Corporation. We're an ISV. And first of all, you guys did a great job giving a lot of online options to build apps with the App Store and all that. I do have some questions that are maybe relevant for us as an ISV. And less relevant for people who are building dedicated apps for their own companies or in-house companies. For example, I saw two things I'd like to get an answer on. I saw that some of the things you have to define as hard-coded URLs, like the endpoint definition in the app manifest, and I was wondering how would that work with a dynamic environment. As an ISV, we don't know where it's going to be deployed or what's the actual addresses or servers that are going to be in play at our customer's scenario. Yep. And another short question, longer answer, I hope, is about protection of our code.
Yep.
Once we're running on client code, all JavaScript, no server-side code,
yes.
Licensing model, and how would I protect my code?
Wow, that's a whole bunch of questions.
Let me start.
Great. So let me start with the URLs. There's three parts of that question. Do I have to act? I don't know the URLs where my app is going to be hosted. Yes, that's true. And for that, we provide a set of tokens that you can use as part of the URL of the app. Every time that the URL is launched, you'll get in the query parameters a set of tokens that you can reuse. They will be the host URL that is right there, the host web URL is right there, and a whole bunch of other tokens that you can use. Just read them from the query string, and you can just reuse them from there.
Yeah, I was referring to a scenario where I want to connect between possibly two or more different O365 SharePoint sites and probably an on-premise. And I'll have to probably configure the app manifest to allow me for that type of connection.
What you have to do in the app manifest is declare the endpoints that the web proxy is going to use.
Yeah.
And that's in particular for that feature. And unfortunately, if
so
you don't know the endpoints that web proxy is going to connect to, then it's scoped to that. It's scoped to declaring the endpoints as part of the manifest.
Okay,
just
thanks.
For the web proxy. Then for the other things that are part of your app, you can just reuse the tokens that
sure,
are
sure,
part.
Sure, sure, the side collections tokens, of course.
So your next question was about protection of client-side code, right? I'll say this. If you have PI, if you have code that you need to protect, that needs to go to an external server. Needs to be hosted in the cloud, You create the web services to interact with it. And that's when I said at the beginning of the talk, like, it will, what makes sense for your scenario, right? Like, there are apps that will be having some of the UI hosted in SharePoint, but all the business logic runs in the cloud.
So SharePoint apps are not relevant for vendors?
SharePoint apps are not. SharePoint
apps, SharePoint hosted apps, are not relevant at all for vendors, for anyone who wants to protect and sell his components?
No. So absolutely they're relevant. I'll take, for example, I'll put you an example that you can go and check out after the talk. If you have a tenancy in Office 365, you can download and install the Pinger app. Pinger is it's a company that runs natural language processes to take metadata out of the documents. Right now, they have an app that has all the UI hosted in SharePoint. They're reusing some of the things that I showed up today, but their logic, their natural processing APIs run on the cloud, right? So there is a mix and match that you can have there that will allow you to provide with components that the user is already familiar with and still protect your business logic on an external server if you want to.
For hosted apps, then.
Excuse me?
For hosted apps, I mean, or for mixed apps.
But
like, if I just want to create like a marquee or just another viewer for a list or something.
That is a combination of both, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, any other question? Go.
I guess philosophy of the whole process is that SharePoint hosted apps are probably the preferred method of delivering applications for various reasons, I think, because it's just easier and faster and stuff like that. It obviously comes with some limitations. My question is, are there any plans to narrow this gap? I can give example the application that you were showing to us. The XML that you received externally from Bing was processing on the client side by jQuery, which is fine if it's small, but if it's huge, it will take extensive amount of time on client side. So ideally, I would prefer to have some facility on the server side, maybe on SharePoint side, to parse the XML. So do some generic function.
Yeah.
So is it possible to do that on SharePoint side?
Not if you have to run code on the SharePoint server.
But in the future, I think, do you think it would be a good idea for Microsoft to establish some sort of common infrastructure?
The model that we are laying out, and you can think about, like, we're laying out the framework right now, and as we move along, we're going to keep on building on this, is a decoupled model where any custom code will run externally from SharePoint, and you can just reuse some of the constructs that I showed to you today as building blocks for your app. But any custom code that cannot run in the context of the browser session or a workflow will have to be executed off server.
That's understandable. But for example, I, as a developer, would probably prefer to request XML from external server but receive JSON because it's going to be much, 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 much faster on the client side. So do you think it's maybe...
That will depend on the service that you are accessing, right? The service can send back JSON to your queries if the end service supports it.
Yes, but is it possible for me as a developer to have a like function or method on the SharePoint side, something very common, like the web proxy that you have? Mm-hmm. Similar to that, but in addition to that, have some processing capabilities that would allow me to offload some of the generic functions from the client side to server side.
It's not available right now. It's a great feedback.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other question?
Yeah, one more. Is it possible to set the endpoints dynamically?
It is not possible to send the endpoints dynamically. They're part of the app manifest, and you have to set them up during app development.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. What? I can put it back for you. Yeah, I can do that. So the question was, can you put back the slide with the components that can be part of the app? I'm going to show that, go back to that slide. Again, an entire list is on dev.office.com. And then you will have, this is just the ones that I think are going to be most important for your development activities.
You mentioned something about the common ground for SharePoint apps and Office apps. What do they have in common?
The question is, what do SharePoint apps and Office apps have in common? They're executing in different contexts, like this one's executing SharePoint and the other one's executing on the client. But it is possible to build SharePoint apps that contain Office apps. And every time that they're deployed, for example, imagine that you have an app that has a document library with a set of document templates. Those document templates can contain apps for Office that will run on the context of the clients. And that will be the intersection point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other question? No. Great. Thank you.